The following audio is from Living Faith Missionary Church. More information about Living Faith can be found at www.livingfaithmc.info.
We are continuing in the book of Mark. If you remember last week, Jesus was on trial. He was in Annas' house. It was a religious trial. And in the middle of that, Mark has a little bit of snippet about the fact that Peter was down in the courtyard. And then now today, I want to talk about Peter and what he experienced. Now, Beth and I just a week ago this last Friday, we just got back from vacation. And I've been to Hilton Head a few times. But, you know, what we do when we get ready to go on vacation, we pull out our phone and we go to Google Maps and we type in Hilton Head directions. And it tells us how to get there. Now, I'm going to age myself, I'm going to show my age, because I remember the day when we would get ready to go on vacation. What I would do is I would pull out my oversized Rand McNally map. I have no idea why it was that big. It wouldn't fit on the shelf, but I would pull it out and I'd look where Fort Wayne was and I'd come down here and I'd go, oh, I got to go to Ohio. Over to Ohio, and I would write down all the directions. You know, we're going on Highway 33, then we'll go in St. Mary's, we're going to get on 75, we'll take 75 all the way through Cincinnati, on down to Knoxville, and we will catch 40 over to the mountains, and in the mountains we go on to 26, and 26 takes, you know, I would write all that down. And then technology got amazing because I could go to the web and I could go to MapQuest or I could go to Rand McNally's website and they would do it for me and it would print out the directions. Now, the problem with that was the fact that there were times, and I will admit this, I didn't have to have therapy in order to admit this, but there were times where I didn't quite follow. And I ended up in places I didn't expect to end up. I remember one time I ended up in a place I wish I hadn't. I ended up in a very bad part of Detroit. Luckily, the lights were all green and I kept moving. But, you know, it was great because now, you know, if I follow my GPS, it will get me, chances are it will get me where I want to go. Now, usually if it doesn't, it's because something has changed or there's construction or something's going on or there's something going on with the technology, which there is right now, by the way. They're trying to update it. But needless to say, there are times when we don't quite end up or we end up going to places we didn't expect to go. Now, GPS decreases that, but I want to say that in our lives, in the lives that we live, sometimes we end up not quite where we intended to be. I'm going to be brutally honest with you. I never intended to be a pastor. In fact, I told God there's no way. I'm not going to do it. Because I had experienced what the church does to pastors. Guess what? I'm a pastor, and that's a good thing, right? Okay. But we don't always end up where we expect to end up. The problem is sometimes we end up in places we probably shouldn't be if we're not careful. And I think this is what's happening with Peter. See, when we're talking about commitment today in Sunday school, but when we lack commitment, usually we'll always end up, if we lack commitment, we will end up where we never intended to be without commitment. If I'm committed to the map and I'm following it and it's correct, it will get me to my destination. But if I'm not committed to that map, if I say, oh, that exit looks interesting, and I just wander off, I may not get to where I intended to be. Commitment is important. We lack commitment, we also destroy the purpose that God has in our life. If we're not committed to Christ, if we're not committed to His kingdom, if we're not committed to His word, we will destroy what God has intended for us. Now, I think ultimately we end up at the destination, but man, the trip was harder than it needed to be. I don't know about you, but there have been times in my life where I knew God wanted me here, but I'll get there, Lord, but I'm going to take this path. And He's like, really? Are you sure? Trust me, I know what I'm doing. And that path was not the path I should have. I still ended up where I needed to be, but it was not a pleasant path. If we're not committed, we'll destroy our relationships. It destroys foundations by how God wants to use our life. And this is where Peter is. We find Peter lacks the commitment that he needed, that he thought he had, but it wasn't there. Peter would probably have been the last person you would have ever thought of to do what he did. He would be the last person that you would expect to be in the situation that he was in. But here he is. But what he will realize ultimately is that he is not as committed to Christ as he thought he was. And it's a detriment to him. In reality, what we have here, we actually have two trials going on. We have Peter going on trial down in the courtyard, and we have Jesus in Annas' house, and he is also on trial. But the contrast is commitment, because Jesus was committed to the Father's will, and his trial in the house is a lot different than Peter's trial in the courtyard. Completely different because of commitment. It is astounding. So I want to, if you got your Bibles, turn to Mark chapter 14. And we're going to start with verse 66. This is what Mark says. And remember, you have to remember that this, chances are this is Peter who's dictating this to Mark. This is Peter's story. And look at the light that Peter paints himself. Imagine he is telling this story to John Mark, and it's breaking his heart just remembering what had happened. It says, as Peter was below in the courtyard, one of the servant girls of the high priest came, and seeing Peter warming himself, she looked at him and said, you were also with the Nazarene Jesus. Now, Peter, he had followed along behind Jesus and the crowd as they brought him to the different places. And now Peter, he probably has a hood over his head or a shawl or something over his face. He's trying to stay, keep his face down so they don't recognize him. He's trying to be quiet. He's trying to be that wallflower that nobody notices. Because he's afraid. And we'll talk about that. But he's afraid. And all the disciples were afraid. In fact, they all deserted Jesus. They were so afraid. But Peter wanted to find out what was going on, what was going to happen to Jesus. So he followed behind. He was afraid that he was going to get arrested just like Jesus was. And if you remember last week, Annas asked Jesus, what were you teaching and who were your followers? If Jesus said, well, I had these 12 guys, 11 now because you got one of them. But, and their names are Peter, James, he ran through the list. Guards, go get these guys. Peter's afraid that he is going to get wrapped up in this trial of Jesus. And so, he's hiding. He's trying to be incognito. But unfortunately, Peter is not very good at it. Because a servant girl sees him. And it's a servant girl of the high priest. She recognizes him. I'm sure you've all had this experience, You look at somebody and you're like, oh man, they look familiar. Where have I seen them? And the little guy in your head starts running through the files, trying to find a picture of that person so you know who he is or she is. That's what this servant girl was experiencing. She's like, I've seen him, and I know where I've seen him. I've seen him with Jesus. I mean, she may have seen him in the temple when Jesus came in and turned over the tables. She may have been with the crowd when they went to the garden to arrest Jesus. She may have seen him with Jesus when Jesus was teaching in the temple courts. We don't know, but we do know is that she sees him, she recognizes him, and she calls him out. She says, you were with the Nazarene Jesus. Now notice, it's not a question. She didn't say, hey, weren't you with Jesus? No, she says, you were with him. It's a statement. She knew without a doubt that this was also one of Jesus' followers. She states it without a doubt. What is interesting about the servant girl is she's instantly and purposefully inflammatory, because look what she calls Jesus. She didn't say, you were with that Jesus guy. She says, oh, you were with the Nazarene Jesus. She calls out where Jesus is from. Now, why does that matter? Why would she call out Jesus as a Nazarene? Well, you must understand that the Judean Jews and the Galilean Jews did not get along. They didn't like each other. Mostly because the Galilean Jews had a lot of contact with those who were non-Jewish. So the Judean Jews, who were from Jerusalem and from Judah, they thought, looked down on the Galilean Jews because they thought they were tainted by the pagans. Also, Galilee was always the place whenever they were invaded, it was one of the first places to get invaded. Now, I don't know about you, but if we live in Ossian and Canada decides to attack, and they come all the way through Michigan and they're coming through Fort Wayne, my first thought is, why doesn't Fort Wayne stop them, right? They didn't like the Galilean Jews because they never really were able to stop anybody from coming through. She's looking at Peter. She says, oh, you're one of those guys, you know? Now imagine how this makes Peter feel. He knows that she recognizes him, and he starts to feel, his heart starts beating quicker. I'm sure his blood pressure shot up. He's like, I'm in trouble now. My disguise didn't work. His heart's probably in his throat. And so what does he do? He does the thing that Peter always does. He talks. He responds. He says something. So what does he do? In verse 68 it says, he denied it, saying, I neither know nor understand what you mean. And he went into the gateway, and the rooster crowed. Now if you remember what Jesus told him, he says, after the rooster crows twice, you're going to deny me three times. Or before the rooster crows the third time, you'll deny me three times. Same thing. So the girl recognizes him. He denies it. He says, I don't understand what you're talking about. I mean, he's trying to play dumb. And then he kind of sulks a little bit deeper away from the crowd, away from the guards who are around the fire, away from the girl, and he goes towards the gate. He's trying to figure out a place where he can make his escape. He's trying to get to a place where he can easily get away. He denies that he was with Jesus and tells her he doesn't even understand what she means. See, it's not that Peter didn't understand. He understood what she said. He's trying to distance himself from Jesus further. He could have just said, nope, I wasn't with him. He takes it one step further and says, no, I don't even understand what you're talking about. Oh, is there somebody in the house? You know, we lie to try to distance ourselves. That's what he's doing. Trying to play dumb. And say that he doesn't even know what's going on. I mean, think about this. Just a few hours earlier, Peter had vehemently said, "Oh, I will never deny you. I will go to my death before I deny you." And here he's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." What a big change. What a huge change from where he was. See, what has happened is Peter has now crossed this threshold that led him, is leading him to a place he shouldn't be. It's almost like, you know, like I said, "Ooh, this exit looks great. I'm going to take this exit." It's you've committed to the exit now. You can't turn around. He has now started down that path that's going to lead him to fulfill what Jesus said about him. I don't think he realized it at this point, though. I think right now he's just trying to save himself. I don't think he realizes that this is the time and this is the path. See, the problem is when we start to put distance between us and God, we don't even realize what we're doing. When we start down a path that leads us away from God, there are not warning signs usually that say, "Don't go this way." Warning, this will lead you away from God. Usually there's signs that says, "Oh, come to our town. It's nice." But we take this path that leads us further away from God than we really want to go. We find ourselves in a place we really shouldn't be. See, the problem is it's usually a slow drift that leads us away from God, a slow fade. You know, you're not driving down the highway and you see the exit and you whip it, you know, as hard as you can and you get over into the right lane, and then you slowly drift off the highway, right? And that's what happens when we start distancing ourselves from God. That's what Peter is doing as he is now not saying, "I don't know what you're talking about," and denying it. He's putting distance between God and himself. In verse 69, it says, "And the servant girl saw him and began again to say to the bystanders, 'This man is one of them.'" What has now happened is, Peter, she comes to him and she says, "You're with Jesus of Nazarene." And he says, "Nope." He backs off and she says, "No, you're one of them. You're one of them." And he's like, "Lady, I don't know what you're talking about." And that was just between her and Peter. Well, now what she does, she goes to the bystanders, the people who are standing there, and she says, "Oh, this guy, he's one of them." She has now brought the crowd into it. What's Peter going to do now? The problem was that Peter spoke. You see, the people in Galilee had a Galilean accent. They didn't sound like it was. They were speaking the same language. It's kind of like, you know, we just came from South Carolina. You can tell the people who are from South Carolina. They have a different way of talking down there. And I have to be careful because I pick up accents quickly. And if I'm talking to somebody for a long time in South Carolina, I start to sound like them. And I have to watch myself because they may think that I'm making fun of them, but I'm not. But you can tell when somebody's from the South. Believe it or not, people can tell. I've been places they say, "Oh, you're from the Midwest, aren't you?" They can tell there's a Midwest accent. But he spoke, and his words confirmed what the girl suspected about him, that he was with Jesus. He was one of them. And now she's pulling other people in. See, Peter thought that if he just moved a little bit away, and if he stood by the gate where he could get away, it would drop. But it didn't. This girl is persistent. And she's pulling other people with her. And Peter does not want to be there. And when she does that, when she says, this man is one of them, he goes and says, but again, he denied it. And after a little while, the bystanders again said to Peter, now, this was before, it was just the girl saying it. Well, now everybody is saying it. Certainly, you are one of them, for you are a Galilean. They knew where he came from. So Peter responds, and he denies, and he has just now dug the hole a little deeper. This is Peter. This is Peter who was in his inner circle. Jesus' inner circle. This is Peter who helped Jesus feed the 5,000. This is Peter who stood on the mountaintop and saw Moses and Elijah standing with Jesus and Jesus glowing in his glory. This is Peter who walked on water and had to be saved by Jesus because he took his eyes off Jesus, had no faith in himself and faith in Jesus, he starts sinking. This is Peter who, when Jesus told him, throw the nets on the other side, when he first met him, he pulled up all these fish. This is Peter who experienced Jesus, and now he has dug himself a hole that he can't get out of. And what he keeps doing, the best way to get out of a hole is what? Stop digging. And he's digging the hole deeper. Nobody, Peter, most of all, never suspected that he would find himself in this position. See, it's easy to be committed when things are easy, right? When things are going good, when we're sitting at Jesus' feet and everything's great, oh yeah, I'm committed to Jesus, this is awesome being a Christian. But the minute you have trouble, the minute you have strife in your life, the commitment becomes a lot more difficult. I was asked a question, I don't know if I told you about this, I was asked a question on Facebook by one of the guys out in South Dakota. He says, so how do you know when Christian community is unified? And everybody's giving him all these answers, when you do this, when you do that. And I said, you know how you know when Christian community is unified? When you have trouble. When you have strife. Because when you have trouble, if the community stays together, if everybody acts like Jesus in a biblical way and loves each other and works through it and are stronger after it, then you know you have true community unity. Otherwise, you're just guessing. We don't know how committed we are until we are faced with trials. How are we going to be? Peter seemed committed. I mean, he actually declared that he would go to his death for Jesus. But the problem was, is that Peter, when he said that, was displaying self. He was committed to himself more than he was committed to Jesus. He was more confident in himself. He says, I will never deny you. I will die first. I will. You can do all kinds of I will statements if you want. But what you need to say is, Lord, if it's your will through you helping me, I will. But only through your power and through your grace and through your love. Not through my own, because my own is weak. Lack of commitment destroys our lives. And you want to know what? The enemy knows it. Satan knows. He wants us to not be committed. He wants us to not be committed to Christ, because if we're not committed to Christ, we will sin and we will fail and we will hurt. And we will hurt the kingdom more with our lack of commitment than we will with our commitment. We fail to build a foundation of what really matters when we're not committed. Understand, you will never be the person that God wants you to be until you are fully committed to Him. You will never walk the way God wants you to walk until you are fully committed to Him. And full commitment means I'm willing to give up everything for Him. I am willing to give up my family. I'm willing to give up my home. I'm willing to give up my job. I'm willing to give up my possessions. I'm willing to give up my bank account, my investment, my retirement, everything for Him. And what happens is the enemy wants to break our commitment and make us unstable, so we hurt the kingdom. Like I said, when we lack the commitment, remember Peter, he's trying to distance himself from the crowd. He's trying to walk to the gate. He doesn't want people to see him. And when we lack commitment, we put a distance between us and where we should be, and it puts a distance between us and others who are committed. So not only am I distancing myself from God, but I'm distancing myself from the body of Christ. The very ones who should be able to come into my life and say, hey, listen, stop. You're going down a path you shouldn't go down. When I'm driving down the road and I start to take an exit and Beth says, are you sure this is the one you want to take? Because she knows where we're going to. I need to listen to her. But if I distance myself from her, if I put earphones on and I'm playing, you know, loud music, I don't hear her, I've distanced myself from her, the very one who can help me. And when we distance ourselves from God, we also distance ourselves from His body because of a lack of commitment. And unfortunately, at times we find ourselves, not only do we lack the commitment, we distance ourselves, but we find ourselves in company we really shouldn't be in. If you remember, back in verse 54, this is what Mark had said. He says, and Peter had followed him at a distance right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the guards and warming himself at the fire. That's how this whole thing begins. As the cracks in Peter's commitment to Jesus are beginning to show, he finds himself at the very fire of the very, with the very men who are going to slap Jesus later and cover his face and tell him to prophesy and spit on him and whip him and do all kinds of things to him. I mean, this is Peter, who was close to Jesus, that if today Peter had a Facebook page or an Instagram page, he'd be blasting pictures of him and Jesus together like crazy, right? This is the one who's committed to him more than all the others. He knows he's a leader. He knows he's close to Christ, but he's far. He is far away from Christ because he lacks the commitment. See, the problem is when we distance ourselves from Christ, when we start hanging around with people we shouldn't, we start to identify with those people, and that becomes a problem because it shows where our heart is. Now, I want you to understand, it's important that we know non-believers and we need to be in their presence, but if your goal is to share the gospel with non-believers, that's great. But if your goal is to escape and be farther away from God because you don't want to and you're not sharing the gospel with non-believers, then you're there for the wrong reason. You're there because you enjoy their company and you're not sharing the gospel. Now, it takes time. I understand that. I don't want you to think that, you know, the minute you meet these people, you've got to, hey, I'm a Christian and you need to believe in Jesus. No, you can get to know them. But if your ultimate goal is just to spend time with them and you have opportunity after opportunity to share the gospel and you don't do it, you're with them for the wrong reasons and you have now distanced yourself from God. If you want to walk in God's purpose for your life, you must be committed to Him. See, when you commit to God in your life, you commit to follow God. When you commit to walk with God, you commit to walk with the people of God. That's what we need to do. And when we do that, when we're walking with God, and when we're close to God, and we're close to His body, when we're close to people, we will find out that we are close to God. And we're drawing closer to Him every day. If you feel you're not close to God, I would say you need to check your commitment. What's interesting about commitment, the lack of commitment, is the fact not only does it distance you from God, but all of a sudden it'll start to create an instability. Look at what happens to Peter here in verse 71. He says, after the girl has now three times says, you're one of them. And now the crowd is saying, oh yes, you are a Galilean, you're one of them. He begins to really crack under the pressure and he becomes unstable. In verse 71 it says, but he began to invoke a curse on himself and to swear, I do not know the man to whom you speak. He calls down a curse on himself. That's, who in the right mind does this? Except somebody who's not quite where he says he is. Like I said, both Jesus and Peter are both on trial, but Jesus is staying firm and Peter is beginning to crack and has now become extremely unstable. You see, I think that Peter's commitment was probably situational. As long as he was close to Jesus in his presence and with the other disciples, he would proclaim, oh yeah, I'm there. And oh, great job, Peter. Pat him on the back. And unfortunately, you and I, we can fall into that same trap. Because while we're sitting here in these pews, it's easy to say, I believe in Jesus and I'm a Christian. It's a lot harder when we're out there in the world and we're in our workplace and somebody says something and we laugh when we shouldn't. Instead of saying, you know, I appreciate what you're saying and what you're doing. That's fine for you. But you have to understand, I don't do this kind of thing. I don't find that funny. And I'm not going to be part of this. Oh, goody two-shoes. Yeah, that's what I am. Because I hold myself to a higher standard. And that standard is Jesus Christ. And this does not make him happy. I mean, can you do that? It's easy here. It's easy for me to stand up here and say it, but what about out there in the world? It's harder. It's harder. It's situational. And that's what Peter was. He was a situational committer. See, what is your commitment level when the pressure is on? Because when we're not committed, it leads to an instability. And it calls us to this idea of being double-minded. And a double-minded person doesn't really know who they are. You know, am I in the church or am I not? Am I close to God or am I not? You know, we can't live our lives one foot in the church and one foot in the world. We need to be the church in the world. We need to be committed to Christ no matter what the situation, no matter what the ridicule, no matter what people say about us, or what they think about us, because in the end what they think and what they say isn't going to matter. The only thing that matters is what God thinks and what Jesus says and what he says about us. Because if we deny God, Jesus in front of man, he's going to deny us in front of the Father. What is your commitment level? You see, in Matthew tells us in chapter 12, verses 36 through 37, he says, I tell you, on the day of judgment, people will give an account for every careless word they speak. For by your words, you will be justified. And by your words, you will be condemned. We will give an account for what every single little thing we've said. And we will say, I shouldn't have said it. That's okay. Jesus says, it's all right, you're forgiven. Peter doesn't understand the words that he is saying when he calls down a curse. But what happens next will crush him like a pile of rocks. Which is funny since his name means the rock. A lack of commitment causes brokenness in our lives. Look at verse 72. It says, immediately the rooster crowed a second time, and Peter remembered how Jesus had said to him, before the rooster crows twice, you would deny me three times. And he broke down and he wept. Anytime when you're not fully committed, it will create brokenness in your life. It will create brokenness no matter what it is. If you're not fully committed to Christ, your spiritual life is going to be broken. If you're not fully committed to your friendship with people, that friendship's going to be broken. If you're not fully committed to your marriage, it's going to be broken. If you're not fully committed to your job, it's going to be broken. It leads to brokenness. Peter is now broken. When he hears that rooster crow, he realizes what he's done. He's broken. And what's interesting is we lose our place. We lose where we are. I think I mentioned this a few weeks ago, but if we look at Mark chapter 16, verse 7, you know, the women are at the garden, at the tomb. And the angel appears to them. This is what he says. The angel says to them, go tell his disciples, Jesus' disciples, and Peter. Why does the angel separate Peter out? He wasn't, quote, the leader at this point. Not yet. I think Peter had lost his place. Peter had gotten himself into position, and he felt so bad about what he did that he was crushed. And for a couple reasons. First of all, I think that he lost his standing with the other disciples. And I think he was beating himself up about what he had done. And he needed to be called out individually to say, Peter, we want you too. We're not done with you yet. Jesus says, I'm not done with you yet. You've denied me, yes, but I'm not done yet. So go tell the disciples and Peter. Peter is broken. He's weeping. He's embarrassed. He's ashamed at what he has done and what he has become. So where are you in your life? Are you fully committed to Christ? Or are you kind of double-minded? Not quite sure where you are? Trying to keep one foot in the church, one foot in the world? Trying to seem religious? When in reality, you are broken and not committed at all. Do you experience brokenness in your life that comes from this lack of commitment that says, yeah, I know, I was going to do this, but yeah, I know I should live the life I should, but I really don't want to. It's too hard. It's too hard. I'm really not committed to it. Or you say, you know, I'll commit to it when this happens. You know, when I get to this point, then I'll commit to it. When I get done with this job, when I retire, oh yeah, when I retire, look out, I'm going to be a super Christian then. When I get this job that I want, when I get a family, when I, whatever. No, you won't. You still won't. Sorry. I don't mean to be mean and blunt, but that's the truth. And the only reason why I know it's the truth, because I've been there and I've done that. What is your commitment level? See, the great thing is we can find hope in Peter's story. Because we know what happens. Jesus comes to him and restores him three times. Three times to reverse the three times he denied Christ. We can't allow the decisions we've made to define us. It's not about trying harder, which is a good thing. I mean, we all should try harder, but it's not about trying harder. It's about trusting more. It's about being more committed to Christ than anything else. It's about being committed to Him and living a life where He lives through us. Because, you know, I can't do it on my own. Believe me, if I try to live my life on my own, I'm going to screw it up. Because I'm human. That's what we do. If I wasn't that way, then why would I need God? If I could live the life I want I should live without God, why would I need God? I can't. And I'm sorry, as much as you think you can't either. You need to be committed to Christ. You need to walk with Him and walk with His people. People say, yeah, well, I'm a Christian, I don't go to church. I would doubt your Christianity. Because you need people around you who can say, I don't think so. You need to not take that exit. It's going to lead you to a place you don't want to be.
Thank you for listening to this message from Living Faith Missionary Church, located in Yoder, Indiana. Feel free to share this recording with others, but please do not charge for those copies or make changes to the content without our permission. For more information about Living Faith online, go to www.livingfaithmc.info.